you know, for the back of the door right now.
Yep. I got dressed this morning. I thought, what
can
I wear a sweater with?
Super coming.
All right, good morning. I'll call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 25th, 2017, and ask if everybody would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, a little lighter agenda today than we've had the last few weeks, but we're still going to endeavor to move through it as reasonably quickly as we can. First item, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items, really on anything, but specifically on today's agenda. If you have something you want to tell the board we need to be aware of, come up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll go to agency reports, and we have our friend Bill Vaughn from Mainstream here today. Hi, Bill.
Morning, Bill. My voice isn't quite as booming as yours, Rick, so I'll try to do
blessing and a curse, Bill.
Yes.
In the spirit of trying to move your meeting along, I won't read the report to you. I'll just talk about it a little bit. You all have copies of it. I've got copies up here for anybody that wants a copy of it. Mainstream Living provides services in Story, Dallas, Polk, and Boone County. We serve roughly 500 people with disabilities on any given day. The vast majority of those people, two-thirds of our people, are people with intellectual disabilities. The other third of our people are people with mental health issues, and we serve those in Polk County only. Up here, we provide home and community-based services for about 80 people. We do hourly, we do daily services. We also provide services for people that are medically fragile. Those are individuals that are largely non-ambulatory, non-verbal, and have medically compromising situations. We have a couple people, one in particular who is also blind and deaf and cannot regulate her body temperature. So she is Helen Keller with a severe disability and not the capacity to hear and speak. And every 15 minutes or so, we measure her body temperature and then regulate that for her throughout the day. We have another individual that also receives extensive treatment with nursing services 24/7. So we have some very compromised people in Ames in particular. We operate the Mainstream Center. That's the developmental center. And I want to thank all three of you. You've all come and visited. You've all been great supporters of all of our services. So I greatly appreciate that. And the Board of Supervisors over the years helped us start our services and get things running. So greatly appreciate your support. In the center, we have rehabilitation services there. We also have a smaller location north of the mall at the Northern Lights area, where we have some people that are doing our highest functioning people with intellectual disabilities get themselves there, run their own clubs, schedule speakers, go do advocacy things, go to the Capitol building, you name it. So some pretty successful things that we're doing there that have actually gotten some notice in the state for that type of service. We also operate some sensory services at our center for people who need that. Sensory stimulation, smells and sights and sounds and textures and vibrating and heat and cold for some very physically impaired individuals or intellectually impaired individuals need those services. And we have an enclave. We have Sour, we have an enclave, and we also have one, Hawk. Hawk one, we're expanding. I'm also in the process of talking with a couple of people in town to maybe start another enclave. So if you got ideas where we can start enclaves, that'd be good too. And we have individuals that that we provide supervision for in the work setting. We have a separate corporation called Workstream that is the employer of record for those individuals. So we train them, supervise them, but they work within somebody else's business. So it's an exciting thing for them. They earn minimum wage and they have an opportunity to work and pay some of their own bills too. So it's a real life-affirming thing for them. So the center serves about 160 people on any given day. Some people come every day. Some people come a couple times a week. Some are half days. Some are, you know, a longer time period, depending on what they can tolerate and what they need. Of our members above, you do fund some of our individuals. You fund some individuals largely that aren't on Medicaid yet. They're individuals that are kind of in between the gaps. When the managed care companies came into place, they took over funding for some of our individuals, but there's still some people that, for one reason or another, are between services, or they might be new to the county. They might be individuals that have not yet received those services or haven't been approved yet. So you do provide some services for that, and I greatly thank you for that. You have let me see here. I'm going to go. I don't think I want to read all that to you. You guys can read that to yourself.
Looks like we did okay on the asset process in terms of what you requested this year and what you were awarded or possibly awarded.
Yes, and you thank you for your flexibility in that. We oftentimes have to ask for a little bit more than we currently need, but we don't know who's going to move in the county.
Right.
And then we often don't spend everything, so we don't use the utilization, and you're able to use that in other. For other people, so appreciate your flexibility with that.
Absolutely, and can you anecdotally give us, or maybe even statistically, give us how mainstream relationship with the MCOs is going in terms of cash flow? How long has it taken to get bills paid? Are they pushing back with your agency like we're hearing they're doing with many others?
No, we've got a good relationship with all three of them. We actually volunteer for some of their pilot projects in that from day one. Still, we have some outstanding bills. We have about $85,000 that is probably past 90 days that we've requested or given them information or sent it in different forms and, with different codes and things. So there have been challenges with that.
Is it getting better? It's a year later. Are they doing better?
Some are and some aren't. Mayor Health Care Costs, in particular, has had some challenges because their internal systems have changed, and they've had to change some of their number of things. There's, all three MCOs have changed to a tiered system that was supposed to happen July 1st. Nobody knows what the rates are going to be. There's a lot of confusion that's still out there. They're saying now it's going to be October or maybe later before that happens. So we're going into a new year with essentially no idea of where our budget's at. And so that's a challenge. Our annual budget's a little bit, it's close to $20 million a year. On any given month, if we have 10,000, 15,000, that's reimbursed are not paid for, so we have to check down. That's not surprising at all. Last year we had counseling and therapy services we stepped up to provide and got licensed for. We're not reimbursed for any of that. We struggled with trying to get the program started and through the coordination process, got it all approved, and eventually closed it down. I think that in a couple of years, the MCOs will see the need for those services and want to start them again, but it'll be challenging to do that.
Huh.
Parents and families are kind of concerned about losing Medicaid services. I'm getting a lot of calls from them. They're attending a lot of different meetings with representatives and the senators as well. So we'll see. We'll be interested in see where Medicaid voting goes. Staff training is a challenge for us and for our industry. That's something that the counties and state have paid for in the past that I'm not sure the MCOs are going to support, and it's something that's going to be desperately needed for our industry. There's a lot of required trainings that have to take place within a very short timeline. There's an electronic system that can be done online that the counties and the states state has supported in the past. But now, if that's all kicked over to the MCOs, they're not giving any indication they're going to pay for any of that, and that's going to be challenging for all providers, I think. Staff shortages are a challenge in our industry. I think every single provider you talk to will tell you that they have a shortage in staff. I'll tell you right now, I have 1,000 open hours somewhere in those four counties on any given week. So that's a challenge, and especially nursing staff. The MCOs came, they hired away every nurse that they could find. They opened clinics, they hired away every nurse they could find. And a lot of those nurses now are working behind the scenes to do quality assurance checks and insurance form checkoffs as opposed to providing services for people. They can't hire and train enough nurses to make the system work. At the same time, the nursing requirements were changed in the state They no longer support LPN programs. DMAC's not really doing the LPN program because they have 4-year RN nurses. So that created a shortage in the pipeline that's producing nurses as well. So that's been a challenge for everybody. If you know nurses, give me a call because we want some. We need some desperately. Ribbon cutting, I gave you guys a flyer for that. We're going to have a ribbon cutting at our center on August 17th at noon. So anybody that's interested, please come by. There's a meal that's going to be before that, and it's the consumers and their parents largely that come to that every so often. And for the center, we've done a lot of accessibility work. We worked with the city and the county to get a community development block grant and USET funding and some United Way funding to do a lot of paving and a lot of accessibility stuff in the parking lot, the ramp that goes into it, the openings to the building, the doors that work there, the mechanisms that work. And then we've, inside the building, we're in the process of lowering some of those very large high ceilings, as you guys remember. That used to be a bus barn. So it's going to be a much nicer, much quieter kind of setting for people once we get the drop ceilings installed as well. So if you have a chance, please come by. See you.
Outstanding. Bill, thank you so much. We're so appreciative of everything Mainstream does and your many years of work helping Mainstream help our community. So thank you so much.
Questions for Bill?
Could you just flesh out the enclave? Amber and I spent a day here about this past winter driving around talking about that. But as far, and you're saying you might have some successful prospects out there, which is good for you guys. On a staffing basis and on a population basis, what's an enclave? I mean, what at what point do you see success? I mean, we're talking a couple people, half a dozen people, 10 people. Could you just help me with that?
It's typically six consumers, five or six consumers with one staff person that's providing supervision for them. Mm-hmm. It's in the employer's setting. Mm-hmm. So if you go into, I'm going to say Sauer again, but I think it might be Dan Fosco.
Well,
I go back so far. 37 years, a key change in the name of that place. Anyway, if you go in there, they have a huge factory warehouse area. You wear the steel-toed boots, you know, there's forklifts going through there. But if you went and went into their factory, you'd find an area right in the center of that where about 12, 14 people that work there with a couple supervisors. In the center there, they're doing installation of small O-rings on very small components that then you'll get moved off into the assembly line. And other work that they've done. They've also worked at unpackaging materials and prepping that for going into the assembly lines.
Okay.
As well. If you go into Hawk, you'll see a couple of different work groups throughout there, and they're adding more where our members are assembling water treatment test kits and small assembly types of jobs that need to be done there. I'm trying to work with some daycare providers to see because a number of our members want to work in a daycare kind of setting. So we're trying to work on doing that and seeing if we can develop another enclave that way. We've had discussions with National Animal Disease Lab about having janitorial enclave settings. We're pretty much open to anything. Our consumers, you know, we won't do it unless they get minimum wage. And in an enclave setting, the organization has to pay enough for that supervisor's rate to be covered. Then we're able to bill a very small amount. It's like $1.50 a quarter hour per person to Medicaid as an employment support. Help cover the cost of the insurance and other things.
But you're looking for a setting that, I guess, if I heard you right, roughly a half dozen to make it viable.
Yeah, that number kind of changes. It can be larger or smaller than that, but that'll change the amount we have to charge for it. But
okay.
It's really a pretty good deal for anybody that's out there looking for a workforce. I've also talked to the Stewart County Hospital about, you know, potentially doing some laundry for them as an enclave, but that's discussion.
Sure. Okay. Outstanding. Other questions?
None.
Bill, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Minutes from July 18th.
I would move to approve as presented.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. No personnel actions this week. Claims?
So moved.
Seconded.
Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims passed. Consent agenda board.
And we move as presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. That gets us to public hearing items. And we got a consideration to vacate a portion of Old Bloomington Road. We started to talk about this a month or so ago, and I think had some problems with some notifications going out. So now we're back to discuss it.
Morning, Darren.
Good morning. As mentioned, we had this hearing a little over a month ago. There was no opposition at that time, but it wasn't until after we had the hearing we realized there were some publication issues. So just to play it safe, we thought we'd run the hearing again and get them published in the three newspapers. So I'll go through this very quickly. Again, show you the map of the location. The road we're talking about is right up here, north of the Animal Disease Lab. Old Bloomington Road is called. And as a reminder, we're only talking about vacating the north half because the south half of the road is under Ames jurisdiction. So they will have to vacate that if they would like to. So we're just talking about vacating this stretch, north half of Old Bloomington Roadway. Picture of that. So with that, I would have the board open up the hearing, and if there's no opposition, I will go ahead and put a resolution on the consent agenda next week that will officially vacate the roadway.
So before we open the public hearing, any questions for Darren?
None.
Okay, we'll open public hearing and ask if there is anybody who would like to address the proposed road vacation. Sounds kind of nice. Road vacation for Old Bloomington. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing turn to the board for action.
I move to vacate a portion of Old Bloomington Road as presented.
I second that.
Further discussion?
None.
Darren, anything else for us? It'll be on our consent agenda next week to go ahead and have the resolution.
Correct.
Super. Chi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes.
Thanks,
Darren. Still in public hearings today, discussion and consideration of Resolution 18-2, Christian Clem Utility Easement Vacation Request. Vacation day here.
Morning, Jared.
Good way to put it.
Morning. Okay, Resolution 18-02, Christian Clem Utility Easement Vacation. It's also item admin 01-17. He's requesting to vacate a 15-foot wide easement that was partially located on the north part of Lot 5 and the south part of Lot 7, Hickory Creek Acres. This easement area is south of the dwelling. That's located at 68389 248th Street. The reason for the request is to make additional improvements south of the dwelling area. Mr. Clem is proposing to construct a new patio, pool, and possibly an accessory building. A little background and history with Lot 5. Prior to Mr. Clem building the dwelling, Lot 5 was reduced in size to make space for the footprint of that house. The easement, however, still stands. All of the lots contain easements. The easements were approved and recorded November 8 of 2007. The house was constructed with a permit August 12 of 2013. There were some issues with the dwelling. It caught on fire. So there was a resubmittal that took place March 30 of 2016. It's primarily the same footprint. Procedure to vacate the easement is set out in Story County Land Development Regulations 87.10. That provision in our ordinance references 354.22 in the Code of Iowa. There's actually two processes set out under our ordinance. One process is initiated by the Board of Supervisors to vacate publicly dedicated items such as public road right-of-ways. Another process that's set out is initiated by proprietors, or in this case the property owners requesting to vacate, in this case, the public utility easement. The Board of Supervisors set a hearing July 11th for today under Resolution 18-01. We did publish notices in the three papers set established by the Board of Supervisors July 6th and July 20th. They were to be 14 days apart. We also sent notices to adjacent property owners within 300 feet of the easement area. We also went a quarter of a mile from the easement area. We sent the information to the property owners, the mortgagee, and the utility companies July 14. We also received documentation from those adjacent landowners and the mortgagee, which we provided. The resolution before you to take action is 18-02. If that resolution is approved, we will record the documents submitted by the adjacent landowners, the mortgagee. We will record the resolution and this certificate from the auditor that the vacated part of the plat can be adequately described for assessment and taxation purposes. This is part of the subdivision plat, which was approved November 8, 2007. The yellow highlighted area is the easement area that Mr. Clem is requesting to be vacated. This is a beautiful conceptual drawing. The gray area shows the footprint of the house, attached garage. To the south of that is the deck area, and then proposed improvement patio pool. The red represents the approximate location of the easement area. This is a footprint of the boundary of the land that Mr. Clem owns. It's about 44 acres. He actually takes access off of 680th Avenue to the west. Property also has frontage along 248th Street. But the dwelling is right here. So access is here. Mm-hmm. Accessory structure. This was part of Lot 5. And again, it was reduced to this area to create space again for the dwelling that was constructed. A little closer view, you see the dwelling deck, and it's approximately 33 feet from the south edge of the deck to the north edge of the easement area. And again, that red dashed line represents the what was the previous limit of Lot 5.
Yeah, so it was a utility easement along a lot line. The lot line was moved so you could build the house, but the easement remained.
Correct. So points to consider is Mr. Clem owns the land where the easement is located. It will not have a negative impact on adjacent lots. It will provide space to do additional improvements. The lots to the west will still retain those easement areas. Realistically, though, when they do or if they build dwellings there, there's easements along the road right away, just north of that right away along 248th Street. There's a lot of creeks and tree areas, so the area probably just north of that 248th Street right away would be the best place for easements. So staff is recommending approval. This would be resolution 18-02. That's the first item. It's admin 01-17. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
But all we're dealing with is 18-02. Correct. You're handling the admin part of this.
Correct.
Any questions for Jared before we open the public hearing?
None.
Okay. We're going to open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address resolution 18-02. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing, turn to the board for action.
Move consideration of resolution 18-02, the Christian Clem utility easement vacation request.
I second.
Yeah, this looks like a no-brainer. Thank you, guys. Yeah. Anything further?
None.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 18-02 passes. The easement is vacated.
Thank you, Jared, for the paperwork.
It was nice to have a resident show up that was so well-informed, so easy to work with, and frankly, you know, you got to enjoy having what you just went through on this one.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Jared. As usual, Mark is right on time. We're to additional items now in consideration of sending the FY18 budget amendment for publication.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mrs. Markley.
I have, I told you whenever I saw you last that I would be
bringing forward a budget amendment, bare necessity type budget amendment. I did talk to conservation, so there's some items in there for conservation that got carried over from last year. Overall, amending revenues by $100,000 and expenses by $1,024,000. The research part, Tedesco Learning Center, those funds need to be carried forward. So, what I'd like to do is have a public hearing on August 15th, which means we have to go to the paper this week so that, we can meet our deadlines for publication. And you can lower, but you can't raise at the public hearing.
Questions for Lisa Mark?
None for me, thank you. It's pretty clear, straightforward. You hear what we're doing. We had to carry some funds over.
Yeah, taking money that was not expended last year, now we need to expend it early this year.
Yeah, and there's a few items that you have approved since we put the budget together, right. Like the rescue dollars that weren't in there. And,
right.
Flushing with geothermal and those types of things.
Sure, but lion's share of the $1 million is research park.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if there's nothing further, I take a motion to send the budget amendment to publication.
So I would move that we send this budget amendment to publication.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. You'll thank Marcus E. again in a minute. Next is discussion consideration of Story County's FY18-19 funding priorities for asset. Are we all ready?
Wow.
18-19, Deb?
Yes. For what? 3 weeks into fiscal year 18 and assets working on fiscal year 19. So there are. Thanks, Shelley. So about a year ago, we made minor modifications to the county's funding priorities, and that was mainly the last two bullet points. We extended the accessibility to medical services to also include substance abuse and co-occurring mental health and substance abuse services. And then we also expanded the very last bullet point to include academic success and advocacy. So those were minor revisions for the current year, so I just left everything in place for the purposes of today's discussion and finding out what direction we need to go. I do want to point out, and this would have to do with the third bullet point, so Senate File 504 that was passed this last legislative session does not allow counties to pay for mental health services out of any other county fund except the Disability Fund, or Fund 10, which is governed by the Regional Governing Board. We're understanding from our local legislators that was a technicality. They are going to address that again next session and see about possibly changing that. But I just want to put that out there for the public to understand that, and just as a reminder to the board. Substance abuse services are not included in Fund 10, so those would continue to be covered through our regular county funding process.
Absolutely. And like you, Deb, I've visited with, a couple dozen legislators, and to a person, none of them were aware of the language restricting the ability of counties to fund. We found workarounds with the small amount that Story County was doing by making sure those dollars were used for training, or as we did last week, making sure it was used more as our landlord capacity. But we shouldn't have to find workarounds, so hopefully this will get handled. The question before us today, Board, is there anything in here that you guys see that you want us to talk about amending this year? So this year was the first year that we had it as it's written now, and Deb, you're suggesting that we have another year of carry forward with what we have. Is there anything that you guys see that you would like to talk about adding to or reducing from what our priorities are?
I don't see any. I did, once again, think about that fourth point a little bit about advocacy and academic success. It's not as directly tied into service as we usually think of direct consumer service, but certainly advocacy is important with what's happening on the legislative landscape at all levels. And then academic success is an important part to be able to move forward, okay? So I'm fine with leaving them the way they are, and then maybe as we head into next year, we can take a look and actually take a two-year look at what the services, actually what we spent, and, you know, the effectiveness, especially with the new United Way monitoring system. But they make sense given where we are in today's environment.
Yeah, so I agree with you, Doris. So the county traditionally, long before any of us were sitting here, has done a great job working with our partners in ASSET to try to make sure that each funder is identifying whatever holes might be and that their funding priorities reflect that. This last year, we noticed a hole, all the funders noticed a hole in some of these more academic, more school-based kind of settings, and I think you're seeing the priorities that reflect that. And I'm with you. I think one more year of this, we're going to get more analysis this year based on the new scorecard than we've ever had on the effectiveness of our dollars, and then it may be time to go back in and take a look at it. Marty, anything from you?
Learned a new term yesterday. The county hosted a regional mental health forum where we got a lot of stakeholders, the NCOs and responsive agencies in our region, to sit down and try to see where we are and where we believe our path forward was. I like the component coming out of education.
That's a good song. You're going to have your ringtone. At least make it a good song, everybody. Vibrate is preferable, but if not, make it a good 80s song.
1976 was a good year. We had a term come out yesterday, which coming out of the school setting for a number of years, where the people don't necessarily see mental health as something that is present in a school setting, but it's often identified through it. And they had a term yesterday that was called trauma-informed care.
Uh-huh.
That we are learning as we become a better society that there are places we can be interventive in individuals and families' existences. And I'm glad to see that we are taking that conversation and bringing it to ourselves. So it was a good day. It was a rolling series of three meetings. We will be offering up information as we get it collated.
Okay.
Super. All right, so I would take a motion. I welcome a motion to adopt these Astoria County's asset priorities for
18-19.
Do you want to? Sure, I'll take it. I move that we adopt these priorities for fiscal year 2018/19 for the asset process.
I second that.
Further discussion? Deb, anything to add?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Our priorities are set for FY19. Thank you. Next is discussion and direction to staff to compile amendments to the urban renewal plan. Leanne Hart.
Hi. Presentation I have is actually very similar to what I shared last week, so I won't delve deep into these other than go right to the slide proposed changes. This should start to be seeming very repetitive. This is generally the section that is amended when we do have the applications come forward. Section 2 is the section that lists the types of projects. So we'd add new numbers 31 through 34. This would be all four projects that have been submitted applications. The board's practice has been to incorporate every application, whether or not it is indeed funded. If it does not receive funding, next year we come back and we remove it. But at the outset of the program, the Astoria County made the decision to incorporate all projects. So that's why all four included, even though you've not had a discussion on what you will or will not fund. Same practice for changing Section 5. It's repetitive. Section 2 lists them by number. Section 5 lists them by bullet. That's the way it was set up. Section 8 would need to be amended too with the county financial information, and this is where we add in the total of the projects again, and if the total projects are not funded, that gets amended next year. Exhibit B is the map, and that is simply adding a bullet and then a corresponding point on the legend for the full projects. So again, this is the table I shared last week. The four projects before you are Cambridge for $45,000, Gilbert for $58,100, Slater for $94,500, and Story City, $75,750. Pull those $273,350. And with that,
and you added the column there, right? The total amount that we funded?
I think it was there. I think what I added is what it would be if this project was funded.
Okay.
That's what's in red for the communities. You see where that really stands out with the city, Gilbert. This is Gilbert's first application.
Yep.
That amount under total funded amounts had been zero, and if you fund that, it would be $58,100. The schedule that we're following is today I get direction to go ahead and compile these changes and place that amended draft amended plan on the county's website. Also, send a legal notice for the to newspapers for official publication.
Super.
With that, any questions?
Questions for Leanne? This is following process that has been set. It does not commit this board to funding anything. But it gives this board options to fund all the things that have been requested at the levels that have been requested.
In following up whether we had the dollars to award last week's grantees, it was an interesting find, and I think Lisa would be much more qualified to speak to it, that we have awards not taken yet, dollars not moved from communities that we've awarded that we're carrying on the books.
I had those questions for when we
just
did
saying,
that.
You know, thinking, well, we're of like mind in that sense, is that they are coming to us asking for these dollars for these projects. We, previous boards, you have awarded them, and the dollars still remain in county hands. And they're just like, what's that about?
I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability for what limited information I have. Lisa and I had that conversation last week, and so I did email Jennifer Davies, who serves as a clerk for the city of Kelly. Kelly is kind of a rather large outstanding amount. We've paid a portion of it, but there's about $34,000 left. That would be date back to fiscal year 15. In addition, Colonesco School District has two outstanding reimbursement requests. So I did reach out again to Dr. Steve Gray, who serves as the superintendent of both Nevada and the Colonesco School District. When the superintendent position changed, there were some changes with the business office, my understanding, and some files were just misplaced. And so that's a discussion I've been having with Dr. Gray since December. I did get an out-of-office reply to my email, but I know they're well aware of it, and their business manager is trying to follow up with that. That's for fiscal year 15 and 16. In addition, I did email Jennifer Davies again on behalf of the city of Slater's to find out there's about almost $80,000 outstanding from that fiscal year as well for the Main Street improvements for Main Street and Marshall, and then the acquisition building on Main. I've not heard back from her in that regard. I checked my email right before the meeting, but I've not heard back. And then there's some from last year that I know are just probably still in the process.
Which is pretty typical for it to carry longer than that first fiscal year. It just gets problematic when they start to carry year after year.
And I think it's something for the board to have a discussion in regards to when we bring the policies back November, or this fall, not specifically November, just this fall.
Okay.
Is there a time frame?
Lisa, do you want to do this now, or do you want to do it when on your regular schedule?
I'd gladly do it now.
Yeah, let's do it now.
A couple points that I want to clarify is, Leanne and I had this discussion, the TIF funds are tied to the projects, so if they're not drawn down, you have to reapportion them to the base. And You can only go back 3 years to do that. So there's ramifications and a lot of accounting.
So ramifications if it goes, hard work for it to go any year, but we can't go any further back than 3 years.
Yeah, well, no. So, no, you can't go back to reapportion it to the base farther than 3 years,
okay.
More than 3 years back. So letting the money sit there and waiting for them to draw is about your only option. And then staying on top of them to draw down those funds, as far as I'm concerned. Otherwise, you have a whole another ball game you have to deal with.
I seem to remember a discussion that we can only borrow the money, the TIF money, if we're borrowing in the same year that we're going to spend it. Is that accurate, or is my memory off? Now, I know these are just tax collections. This is not the borrowing.
Right, this
is
the borrowing. Right.
Right. But then my next question is headed into then, about...
So does
the work have to be done in the same year we allow?
You have a dollar amount that you want to collect,
mm-hmm.
and you tie it to the projects and to borrowing. So it's a dual...
Okay, thank you.
So, no, we're not borrowing for the projects. We're collecting TIF revenue for those projects and putting it into a fund so that it sits there and waits for the projects to get.
And so with the money that we're collecting, mm-hmm. then not borrowing, is the work supposed to be done in that same fiscal year that we collect for it, or is that the 3 year?
It has to be reapportioned back if it's not used for those projects in 3 years.
But they don't have to... reimburse, which
right.
means it has to be done
right.
first.
And
okay.
the award letters generally go out like a week or so following the approval. In the first, I think, two iterations, it was in the fall, and so the award letter said we'd like them to be done by November 30th next year. With the idea that the funds would become available for reimbursement in July, but again, it's a reimbursement basis, so the cities or entities would have funding. To do the project up to that point. We found that time frame wasn't really, it was too short of a time frame, especially when projects have to go to bid, design, whatever it may be. We still put a preferred deadline, if you will, that here are the requests, here's the forms you need to submit, but the policies are really silent on how that's approached. Which, again, would be something to discuss.
Which is
absolutely.
How you want the policy. I mean, I don't... Yeah, I think that's how you want the policy because like I said, reapportioning those back to the base is not something that...
Right. No, that's ultra-complex,
usually,
but...
Right.
But that's better than the alternative of it going beyond the 3 years and we reapportion it back to the base, but then still have to spend the dollars. So we don't want it to reach its expiration date, but I believe we need to talk about something in our policies that says if this doesn't happen within three fiscal years of the request being approved, that it's no longer available. We just need to think that through for November.
Yeah, you need to think that through because you're tying it to a project when you're collecting it. So if you're not going to do it,
if the project gets canceled, then something happens. Yeah. So okay, we'll bring that to us here this later on. Yeah, doesn't impact us for what we're trying to decide today.
So okay, so let's go to that. I did give you some documentation for where we're at. The projections for the...
All right, so let's make sure that everybody's on the same page here. We've now jumped down, and we're talking about TIF funding update from the county auditor, which is item number 12-1. 12-I.
Your projections for the 2018 budget are $1,061,397 would be the 50%. Okay. Do everybody find that? See that?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So then go to the overview TIF dollars that I presented, and if you look at FY 18, on the project balances of unused TIF dollars. We're talking $1,061,399 bringing in. We have debt obligation right now $519,426.50, which is the Jacobs Lake that we borrowed for, which has a balance of 1.685 left on that loan, and the Tedesco Learning Center, which has a balance of 1,366.
And now we're talking about an additional $1.5 million that's not calculated as part of this $519 debt obligation.
Right? Correct. You have an urban renewal obligation that we just talked, that you guys were, we were just referring to, of $615,316.87, which is projects you've approved that still haven't been drawn down on. Okay? So your balance for the... This is all projected. You guys realize this, right? Because TIF is a $494,348.26. So of that $494, you've got requests in front of you for this year of $273,000. Did you say $273,350?
Yep.
So there will be dollars available to either pay another debt obligation, or those would be reappropriated back to the...
What are we paying on the $1,005,000 that we borrowed for...
$135,000.
And so it's reasonable for this body to assume that if we were to approve the new $1.5 million, it would be somewhere in that $135,000 to $150,000.
I was assuming $150,000 to $170,000, just okay, to be on the safe side. But yeah, I would assume it's going to be in that same general vicinity.
Right. Which, if you did that, that takes us down to $320,000 available this year, mm-hmm, and $274,000 of requests, which means that if this board so chooses, there would be dollars available to fund all four requests. Doesn't mean we have to. It just means that
the dollars
are available,
available
if we choose to.
If you choose to.
Okay?
If we could go back to the amount of the $615,316.87, which are our total, urban renewal obligations. This is the cash part.
This right? is, okay, so what that is, mm-hmm, is the projects that we have not
funded,
distributed the money out on.
Okay.
The ones Leanne was talking about, there's some Kelly dollars, mm-hmm, Colonesco, Slater, Prairie Rail Trail. There's 2 years worth of Prairie Rail Trail that hasn't been totally drawn down on.
Okay, thank you.
Which will help you clarify where all those dollars are. Yeah.
Right.
Colin Slater, Story City, and more Prairie Trail. So at this point in time, I did it by fiscal year. I have 34.4 from 15, 227.821 from 16, and 353.061 from 17. That makes up that $615,000.
Thank you for that. That's where I got lost. That's how we got so high.
Geez, you waited till then to get lost.
You left-handed compliment.
I know.
So. The top of this document does tell you where we actually ended FY17 and what we're carrying forward to 18, then, which is referred down there, and it also gives you the balance due on projects or on our debt, our TIF debt.
Good. Okay, so that actually takes care of another item on our agenda. Any questions on the TIF funding update from Lisa Martley? We don't need to take action there. That's an update for us. Now, we do need to go back and take action on directions to staff compiling the urban renewal plan. And if we like it as presented, our direction can simply be, this is what we want the document to look like, proceed. If we want to make changes to what's presented, then we need to do that and give that direction.
I see nothing that would change.
Neither do I. I think discussions in November.
We can do it then.
Yeah. So I'm on board. I would move that we approve the urban renewal document as presented to us.
Second.
Motion second. Lee, anything to add?
No.
Mark, any other thoughts for the day? Any other thoughts that are appropriate for today?
I'm good, thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Olson.
Sorry, aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Urban Renewal Plan as presented. Next, discussion consideration of continued funding for the $175 for the Watershed Coordinator for Central Iowa Watershed Management Authority. That's the 4 Mile Creek that we have just a little tiny piece of. Leanne, what can you tell us about this $175?
I received an email from the individual with Polk County Soil Water Conservation District asking that the various jurisdictions that are party to the 28 agreement again consider the funding request. This was approved by the board last year. What they'd like to do is take it to a 3-year commitment, so it'd be $175 each year. Again, Story County's piece of pie is $175. They're calling it the Central Iowa Watershed Management Authority's Watershed Coordinator. It's going to be the 4 Mile Creek Watershed, Walnut Creek, and Mud Camp and Spring Creek Watershed Management Authorities, and it's all contracted through the Polk County Soil and Water Conservation District. That is the entity that's in charge of the staffing and whatever associated with that. I included a proposal for what they intend the role would be, not only the Watershed Management Authorities, but the position as well. It's already staffed, the individual that they, I think he was here when the plan was approved, to ask to seek approval of the plan. The entire staff is very, very supportive of the initiative through Polk County Soil and Water Conservation District, so you get more of just than the one individual, too. They're all assisting. Again, we have a small piece of this watershed.
Small piece. It's a really creative way that they went about putting this together. It was something that the previous board was in full support. I mean, it's much easier to support something when it was $175. But I believe it's part of our duty to be an active participant in something like this. And then the reality that we're going to see with Squaw Creek and Kegley, both of which now have authorities created, and then any other authorities that might get creative, either wholly or mostly within Story County, we're going to have a little different role than this $175. And so you guys just need to be aware of it as we go forward. Mm-hmm. Questions for Leanne?
I have none. And if nobody's got anything, I would move the continued funding for $175 for the Watershed Coordinator for the Central Iowa Watershed Management Authority in 4 Mile Creek.
I would second it.
And just for clarification, Marty, you intend that to be 3 years.
I intend to amend it for 3 years.
I accept the amendment.
Yep. Further discussion? Yep. Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thanks, Leanne. Next is discussion consideration of Board of Supervisors internship programs. Alyssa Whitfield. And Leanne.
All right. Let's test out this guy.
Thank you.
It was probably a month ago, I think at a board meeting, there was direction given to Leanne, Deb, myself, to meet. And so the three of us, along with Noelle, met last Monday to discuss the board intern program, to kind of overview, you know, what we've implemented, what if there still needs, and bring back a recommendation to the board, which is what we are doing here today. So just to get a real brief overview, right now we have a human resources internship program within the board's office. I did bring that program to the board back in August of 2016. That specifically was brought to the Board of Supervisors because we had not budgeted anything. in the board's budget for a human resources intern. We filled that internship on November 1st. In fiscal year 17, we had a little over 500 hours, costing our budget a little over $6,100. During that time, I apologize, this is kind of small up there, we've been able to accomplish a lot. We've been really fortunate to have hired an intern that has a lot of skills, and anything that we've given her, she's been able to take on and be really accurate. So we've been fortunate. We have a lot of stuff that has been done within this fiscal year, and all HR functions. Our intern has helped our generalist, Noelle, with I-9 audits, implementing. We have new policies and programs that we have in the last fiscal year, so they've helped with implementing that. We've updated NeoGovern, which is our online application system, so every time anything with a job description or a salary changes, we have to update that. We have a pretty robust wellness program now. Our intern assists with that. And also the board approved and implemented a new employee recognition program this year, and our intern has been instrumental in implementing that. So those are just a few. It's not a complete list. I didn't have enough room to put everything up here. But just in the last year, we really had a huge benefit. We felt the benefit of having an HR internship program here at the county. So what we have budgeted for next year, we do have $6,000 in the Board of Supervisors budget for an HR intern. We would like to keep that program the same as it is. We feel like similar tasks, you know, as we implement new programs and policies, those tasks may change a little bit. And we're not making any recommended changes to that program at this point. So we'll go on into the communication internship program. Funds have been budgeted for a communications intern program. Those were originally approved back in FY16. I listed the duties. Leanne worked hard on figuring out exactly what we would need a communication intern to do and put this together. We were fortunate at the beginning of the summer or May when college was out, we did increase our HR intern hours. We had enough funds left in the budget to do that. And she was able to help with these tasks listed up here. There's quite a few tasks up there. I don't know if Leah wants to touch at all on that and how that was a benefit to her.
Well, and I think what Alyssa said is was very well stated. Whatever the intern does, she does it very well, and we've been very fortunate that she was able to add her marketing skills and knowledge to help provide the materials that help get a message out to. She had a background in that she was able to teach me quite a few things and trying to develop a new software learn a new software package. So it was fortunate that she was able to come on board and help me when she did.
You guys are making Rachel blush. She's in the back of the room. We're really lucky that Rachel has been our intern.
Slide isn't in my copy.
I apologize. The Leanne pointed out when I sent it out, I attached it to the agenda, and for some reason I had put the list on there. And I hadn't put the task. So I had to update it. It was added to the agenda. First thing Monday morning.
Yeah. And make sure I was.
No, I made an error in that slide. Okay. It said all these tasks, and then none of the tasks were listed.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Yeah. So currently in our FY18 budget, we do have $6,500 plus FICA tax budgeted for a communication intern. This would give us approximately 590 hours for this fiscal year. Again, I said the job description was previously developed and then approved by HR, which is how our intern job descriptions, they don't come in front of the board, but each department works with HR to get that, you know, make sure the job descriptions are okay and then we advertise for those interns.
The board's responsibility is to allocate or not allocate the dollars, approve the concept of the position, and then staff is supposed to develop.
We always budget. It's in the extra help line item in all the department or offices budget is how that's spelled out. We did contact the Greenwood School. Julie, for Vasco Powers, I mean, we had some questions as far as what would qualify as the coordinating supervisor, so we sent over Leanne's job description to make sure that that would qualify, and she said there are a lot of tasks that align with that. And my understanding is that we go ahead and advertise, hire our intern. If that intern wants it to qualify as a Green School scholarship, then they go into their system and they apply, and then that's approved by the university, is my understanding.
Okay.
On how that works. I kind of asked, you know, how much paperwork, right? We gather a little bit of information, so we knew exactly what the burden would be on the county to have that type of a program.
Okay.
We also, Leanne's going to talk a little bit more. She has a little more information on other types of programming opportunities outside of, like, hiring an actual intern. These would be at no cost to the county. This would be working with our local school districts to have them do certain projects. So I'll go ahead and let Leanne talk about those.
Well, what we're thinking is, with fall approaching the school, that the college internship program would start in the spring. And so trying to identify if any opportunities existed for assistance this fall yet. And through that, we have several K-12 programming opportunities. It's the Ames School District is the Ames High Business Engagement Collaborative. That's managed through the Ames High, and then Allison Doyle with the Research Park, Iowa State University Research Park. And then through the Nevada School District, we have LAUNCH, which is Learning Application Understanding Inquiry Compassion and Honor. It's built into, just like the Ames High program is, it's built into the regular schedule of the high school students. And then Nevada also has the Innovations class, which is where they find a project they're passionate about, and they work with the business entity on that regard. And so those two school districts specifically have those programs. But then all school districts in Story County are participating in SCALE, which is Story County Active Learning Experiences. I know Brenda shared this with you as part of her workforce development initiatives. And this is an area wherein they get dual credit, both college as well as high school credit towards high school graduation through working through DMAC. There are four strands, Health and Human Services, Engineering, Renewable Energy, and Biosciences, and Business Communication Technology. And that's where, again, any of the all the school districts in Story County are participating, so any students could potentially be eligible through that. We would submit projects and work through that process.
Okay, so when we look at internship programs, we really want to make sure that it's a good experience for the intern also. So, we obviously have a need for an intern, but we also want to make sure it benefits that individual. So we do put those, we take consideration when we put those programs together. So what we came up with is more of a hybrid approach. We feel that if we can recruit and hire a communication and social media intern, we have the funds budgeted in this current fiscal year. We would like to utilize the Iowa State Boutique Fair, which is their internship and networking fair at the Greeley School, and that's on September 26th. There is no cost for the county to participate. We just have to let them know ahead. We have to go ahead and register for that. I think that would be a good idea. I mean, we can just put the advertisement on our website, but I really think we need to go out and network with the students and to get them to want to participate in our internship program. We'll also advertise on Story County website, college websites. We do want ours to meet the veterans preference requirement for our positions here at the county, so we do have to advertise. And there could be a possibility that we have other college students other than Iowa State students apply for the internship. You know, we have DMAC.
Sure.
And different things. One thing I do want to add about the Greenlee internship, they did say it can cross semesters. So it doesn't have to all be in the spring semester or the fall semester. And I guess they just have to get that number, you know, 490 hours or whatever hours put in. So that's, you know, while it would probably be close to the spring semester before we get the recruitment done and hire, they could potentially start the first semester.
Sure.
But it's not tied to the beginning of the semester school.
So let me make sure that I'm comprehending what you guys are saying or what I believe you're saying. So you're suggesting that we would just proceed kind of down the track of having an internship with the possibility that it could qualify as part of the Greenlee School for credit, but that would really be dependent upon who we select, and then whatever work they need to do to get it done. It's been indicated that it may, parts of our program may in fact qualify for them to get credit.
Yeah, so we would, you know, my understanding is, and how we can have it tie into that is we go ahead through the recruitment. We pick whoever we want.
Right.
If they wanted to qualify as their internship that they need to finish their program at Iowa State, then we can work through that. We're going to get our best, or not our best, but we're going to have a more pool of candidates that's local. It's a great, that's why, you know, we suggested going to their job fair and promoting their internship program. Doesn't necessarily mean that we won't have an intern that apply or somebody that applies that's got higher qualifications. We don't know until we get those applications.
And HR intern, you're suggesting just stay in the course?
Yep.
Well, okay. Yeah. Good. Question for it.
I look forward to, if we choose to go through with this, that you have struggles in picking out the candidate you want, because if we get multiple applications from a larger pool, which you're obviously looking to get into, I think we might just be very fortunate.
Yeah.
I think this is a good approach here through the next couple of semesters. I think it is thought out well. It has flexibility in it. The Greeley, if you go the Greeley route, you know, it really is going to be based upon what that person needs. And just as a reminder, it's a credit class for them, 3 credits, and they have to pay for it. So, you know, so it's I remember doing lots of paperwork and you fill out evaluations during it, okay? So I would make a motion that we approve both the communication/social media internship and the HR internship possibilities as presented here with all of the options to be explored. And then we come back and possibly get an update on how it's going this spring.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. Yeah. Is that your motion?
That's my motion.
I second it.
Perfect. And I just want to underscore that I think it's a really exciting opportunity to also find areas that we can utilize some of our high school students.
Yep.
If there's places that they fit, even if it's, you know, one project at a time that they're working on, I think that would be great if we could get that done. And I understood that to be part of your motion.
Yes, that is definitely part of the motion. I think we're going to be excited to see what they're doing with graphic design and video especially, too. So, yeah.
A further discussion?
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thank you guys. Good job.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Good luck on this.
Boy, it's all down to you guys. We got an update from the Story County Attorney's Office on the possibility of implementing local standards for confined animal feeding operation master matrix scoring worksheet. Ethan, and I don't see Margaret, so just Ethan today. Only Ethan. So this goes back to a conversation we had late winter, early spring, taking a look at what, if anything, the county could do with the master matrix. So we put our own scoring in. At that time, Ethan, we asked that you reach out to the Attorney General. And so what can you tell us?
Yes, if you remember, this process started back in end of February with, actually started before that in November, with a slideshow presentation given by Gene Tinker to ISAC members. Now, the slideshow identified Gene Tinker's belief that counties could take a more active role in master matrix scoring process. And what he advocated for was defining terms not used or not clearly defined in the master matrix code sections is chapter 459 and the Iowa Administrative Code chapter 65. So we had those areas to recommend that we explore those gray areas to see if we can add any further local control. And the goal is to take a more active approach. Instead of a passive approach, we wanted an active role. After looking into it, my legal conclusion after talking to Jessica Reynolds, county attorney, ISAC General Counsel, but that there maybe appeared to be a limited opening to take this approach, but that I have to look into it. And my caution was there may not be an opening, but we'll look into it. It's my fear now, after hearing back from the Attorney General, that door has closed, that there is no opening for local control in this matter. It's kind of a home rule preemption analysis where the home rule authority has been scaled back in this regard. And I'll just read a couple of highlights from the Attorney General's opinion. It's not an official opinion, but I believe he speaks for the Environmental Division, which is a group of attorneys in the Attorney General's office that handles these matters. And so it was his belief that DNR's master matrix preempts any local ordinance or requirement for TAFO construction permits. He says here in a very interesting sentence that you can parse for yourself what it means, but he says the DNR did not necessarily agree with Gene's advice.
And now Gene is no longer with DNR, right? I don't think it's related at all. I think it was more a funding issue, but my understanding is in the last couple of weeks, Gene is not with DNR anymore.
I found that out yesterday with Laura's email. I wasn't aware of that, but yes, I believe that's the case.
And again, I want to underscore, I don't think it's related at all to this. I think it's a complete funding issue, but it's very interesting that they parted ways.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so he points out, this Attorney General does, Assistant Attorney General, that counties can come up with any rules or requirements they want to, but the DNR is not to follow any of them. If a CAFO application meets the DNR's minimum requirements under the master matrix, any rules or requirements that the county would impose above and beyond that will not prevent the DNR from issuing the construction permit. I think he illustrates, as an illustration of this, he has a Humboldt County case he references, where the Humboldt County had local ordinances that they used to deny a permit application. This application then went to the DNR, and the DNR disregarded the local ordinances, essentially ignored them, and issued the permit application anyway. So there you have a kind of clear-cut example of how Gene's advice to go down this road of a local ordinance was kind of not followed by DNR, and constantly the Attorney General concludes with that advice, and they're not going to follow the local ordinances. As an interesting thing to note, though, I was talking with Laura's, we don't know kind of what their internal written rules are on these scoring matters. But we're going to just defer to them in this regard because we've been preempted out. And he goes on to say that imposing anything above the minimum requirements, they won't honor that. And we can do it as kind of an exercise, I suppose, of futility, but we can do that if we want. We can look to local ordinances, but there's nothing to be gained from it aside from a preemption challenge to the ordinance. I think the real way to handle this issue is, it's been pointed out to me that it's a legislative priority for ISAC for 2018. I think the legislature suggested legislative priority for 2018. I think that's where any reform on this master matrix is going to happen. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
And as I understand it, there was actually a meeting last Tuesday down in Des Moines where they talked about the possibility of reopening the master matrix. It'll be interesting to see if that gets any traction at all.
Right. Thank you, Ethan. And thank you to all the staff. Okay, we had, six or seven different staff back in February worked very hard to look at the matrix, to see where we might have some area of local control. They did research, made phone calls, and there was even a draft of possibly a CAFO policy written. I mean, the staff really stepped up to the plate here to see that we did a thorough job. And I want to thank all of them for that. One thing I certainly would use as some of what they found, if we can get some of these just informal coffees going, they would be topics for these coffees. The situation about, let's say, the emergency action plan. This is something Margaret brought up as she exchanged. She ended up having another commitment and couldn't come today with this kind of last minute thing. So, but she brought up, so does that mean, for example, if they claim that they have an emergency plan, but it's very sketchy as far as how it's sketched out, can we require that it be more robust? I'm not quoting her exactly, but this is the thought of what she was communicating with Ethan and I. And, can we still say, hey, if you're going to get your points for this, you've got to actually have something that seems to, look like it makes sense and is workable. And Ethan, your reply was?
Well, I believe it's clear from the Attorney General, if it meets the DNR's minimum requirements, then no, we cannot request any more.
No, we can't. So that might be a discussion as in some of these coffees, discussing about, you know, safety. You know, and where is the voluntary, is there any kind of will to do any kind of voluntary safety plans, both environmental and personal or not? I mean, these are topics that came up because with the staff, you know, if to remember, emergency containment was another one, discussing filters. The pros and cons of different types of filters, if we set those, talking about road surface when it came to actually drives in and out and width, et cetera, discussing about well plugging standards, and discussing about closure plans. These were all areas that were identified as a possibility, at least at the start of our journey.
When we had the workshop, right. Those were right. All the things we were
those
talking
were
about.
All the things they had. So as I said, if some people would be willing to just to sit down and try to talk about common interests, these might be some topics to start on about what are the two or multiple varying viewpoints on it. I don't know that the coffees have a direct ability. Well, they don't have a direct ability to affect anything other than maybe to try to find some points of common interest to try to look at what might be moved down the road. One thing would be with the proposal, and I don't remember, Rick, when you brought back the legislative priorities, I can't remember which county supervisor is proposing once again that we reopen and revisit the master matrix. All right.
Multiple counties have requested that.
All right. So that, I believe, will be ISACS will be setting its priorities in a workshop on Tuesday, August 22nd. Isn't that what it was? All right. So we won't make it with coffees for that, but maybe in the future, are there some things that we could maybe get citizens to, as a group, on various sides of the issue, come forward and say to us, yeah, we'd like to see if you guys would like to weigh in on this. That's, you know, see what, where would we as a board like to take a look at, if we want to take a look at what revisiting of the master matrix, or if it does get reopened based upon the you know, kind of the pressure coming from various entities, where might we want to participate?
Yeah, so I really appreciate everything you just said, specifically where you started with thanking staff. Staff put a lot of time into this. I think that was dead on the money, Lawrence, and I really appreciate that. I'm struggling with the rest of what you're saying and what you're visualizing this board's role to be in these master matrix discussions until and unless the state reopens it. And this would be a legislative reopening.
Right.
Until and unless the state reopens it, it seems to me that there's only two positions for the county to take, three positions, right? We can take a position against reopening the master matrix, we can take a position for reopening the master matrix, or we can continue to do what this board has done in the past and take no position on it, no formal position on it, one way or another. So that's one thing. And then I start hearing you talk about these coffees, and I get really concerned about the idea of the board inserting itself into a conversation that we don't have any control over, where even if the conversation is going to be had, but the second we insert ourselves in, it starts to look like it's got more formality than I think it really does, and that's what I'm struggling with.
Right, and I understand that, and that's why I'm continuing to try and say that we don't have a role in this.
Right.
When I reference these topics, they're just things that came up.
Absolutely.
But they could be other things that this group, but as I said, trying to just get some people with different views to sit down and talk about. They get to set the agenda. We're not doing anything here. I mean, you know, I'm not a facilitator or anything like that, other than trying to get the coffee to everybody at the table. And I'm doing that as a citizen with connections, as opposed to the county. You are accurate about that. Yeah, we only have three choices here, And what I referenced about if there are ideas that these, that a group of citizens sitting down and talking come to some kind of consensus and they decide they want to approach the board to make some kind of recommendation or ask us to do something like citizens do all the time, then that would be when we would have to in some way respond. But I'm not looking to instigate that type of action.
Yeah, so that, you clarified for me. I was afraid you were asking for the board collectively to take some kind of role in these calls.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah, and then I want to mention one other thing that we can't discuss here today, but I'd like for us, Ethan, to discuss this in the future. And I'm not sure that this rests with you, but you could possibly be the instigator if you talk with Jessica and see if this is a conversation. So the disconnect that I'm hearing, and I want you to affirm for me if you feel like this is the same disconnect, is that the county is asked to score these master makers. So we put our process in place for scoring them. But we don't really know what the DNR inner workings are and how DNR is going to score them. And so it's always like we're feeling our way around a dark room trying to figure out what qualifies and what doesn't. So that's the first thing I'd ask you. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Yeah, I think conversations this early spring in February, we had some different communications from Paul Patetti, a colleague of Gene Tinker's, who seemed to indicate that he had an internal score sheet. When we requested a copy of that, he kind of backtracked and said there wasn't really an informal score sheet, but they had a process they used.
They don't want to share any of those processes. It feels like there was a request for that. Did you request that?
I made the request.
It was not shared with us. And so that's why I get to it. Just feels like we don't ever quite know at the county level, not just Story County, all counties, don't ever quite know exactly what the rules and process are, but yet we're trying to score something without knowing what all the rules are. And so here's my wild idea that I'd like us to maybe explore in the future, and that is DNR is hurting for money right now. They've got real problems with state funding. Would it be possible for a county, any county, to contract with the DNR to provide the initial scoring of any master matrix that is submitted to the county? County still goes ahead and does all its notifications. Story County goes above and beyond, right? I think we're double or triple in the area. Still holds public hearings if we so choose, but instead of asking Margaret and other staff members to try to score these things, is it an adequate emergency plan? Well, we don't know what an adequate emergency plan according to DNR is. Instead of going through that whole process where we feel like we've got lots of gray area, can we just pay DNR, hey, we got a master matrix in, will you score this for the board and then make a recommendation? It doesn't even have to be a recommendation. Will you score this for the board and then the board of supervisors determines whether it's sending it forward with that score or not? But then we're all at least playing by the same rules. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I understand your question. I think under the current statutory framework, I think historically we can choose whether or not we're going to adopt the construction evaluation resolution.
Right.
And if we do that, then our obligations are to simply score the application as it's submitted. And, yeah, just noting whether or not there is the emergency plan, they get the points or they don't get the points.
Right, but we can use any method we want to score it. Some counties have the Board of Supervisors sit and score it. Some have staff like us. Some just accept whatever is brought in from the potential producer, right? I mean, so different ways. I don't know of anybody who has asked DNR the question yet of, for a fee, would you be willing to do an initial scoring of this submission for presentation as part of the public hearing? And again, we can't talk about it today because it's not on our agenda. It's just an idea that I'd like us to consider talking about in the future. And so, Ethan, since you happen to be sitting in the chair, I'm directing it toward you. I don't know that it's appropriately toward you, but I'd like us to start to see if this is worth the conversation.
No, I'll be happy to get with Margaret and look into that and report back. Yeah.
Anything else for Ethan?
No.
Good. All right.
Thanks again.
Thank you. Public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. or really anything. We're not going to take any action, but we might in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on anything? All right, liaison assignments. It feels like it's Marty's turn to go first.
Yeah.
Quickly, made address of the mental health meeting yesterday. We will be soliciting input from that on a going forward basis. We have Crestview review meeting here this afternoon as the Board of Health meeting rapidly approaches next month. Had a meeting with 911 consultant, final meeting yesterday, interviewing potential consultants for the build out of the new 911 system in the county. The committee will be making a recommendation to the exec board today. Got an NEDC meeting tomorrow. Keith Morgan downstairs is putting together a mass casualties plan. Dr. Weider and I have been talking about doing that. I will be asking to have put in our consent agenda next week an additional hour per our ME1's scene investigators as approved by a previous board. And just so they can run an exercise, because this is truly a document we'd like to refresh and get really, really thick with dust. So we never have to visit, but we just like to put another look at it in regards to what we would do with multiple casualties in a public setting.
Yeah, that's one of those you never want to have.
You absolutely. If we need to have it. If we thought the tornado thing was something we never want to see, this would be equally of that. I wouldn't want to put it on that same shelf.
And let me say this about the whole E911 selection of a consultant. First of all, Marty, I believe on behalf of Morris, both of us, we really appreciate you serving on that group to help give input there. Gotten lots and lots of compliments from that. That's a pretty broad-based group about your participation, your engagement. So thank you very much for representing us on that. Anything further? Morris.
A shorter report for me this week. I was out, visited the jail's master control area last week and learned all about the helper program, which was written by an actual employee of ours, based off of information coming from a national program that we participate. Anyway, I was very, very impressed. And I'm amazed at the amount of detail and how many things have to be done, the multitasking that has to be done by everybody in master control. So I learned a bit more about how the jail operates. The Storytelling Transportation Collaboration met last week, and I would like to point out to anybody who may listen to the tape or hear that the brochure that is handed out countywide or often referred to go to online on the SkyRide has been updated, and the decision of the collaboration is that we've added Uber and Lyft on and Joyride, also the American Cancer Society's Road to Recovery, the Enterprise Car Share over at ISU, and ISU Transportation Services. And the decision is that, yes, this brochure has a lot of information on it, but that's what's happening with transportation in our county, is there are more and more providers. There's no one provider who's going to be able to make it all. And while HRTA and SkyRide and RSVP tend to be the still big ones we're going to rely on, especially for people with social services, et cetera, that we are a multi-collaboration. And to that end, in about a week, Brenda and I are going to sit down with some people from Progress Industries to discuss non-asset-related employment transportation as a discussion. So that will be interesting, considering normally they would run in through an asset situation, but they want to, they're starting their own or trying to do their own collaborations. So we're going to just sit down and have a little talk with them. And then there is a HRTA board meeting this week and wellness committee. So I look forward to everyone staying cool this week.
Outstanding. Really, really good. All right. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn. So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are you kidding me? It's before noon? That's a headline if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am.
Related to what Marty was.
Come up to the microphone, please. And start by introducing yourself. Thank you.
Deborah Thompson, I'm Richland Township Clerk. In relation to what you were speaking about, has the county had any discussion or any preliminary ideas on how to deal with a black sky event? Were you aware that the Homeland Security had meetings within the past few months where they included a lot of local governments, big businesses, and trying to figure out how to deal with the emergency plan in the event of a massive power failure.
Yep. I would turn you to Jerry downstairs. That's our emergency management person.
Keith.
I got you in my head, Jerry.
Now, what I can tell you is there is no direct formal plan for dealing with a black sky event right now for Story County Emergency Management. We have components of different ones of our responses that deal with that, but it's an important conversation that needs to be.
Homeland Security is saying that they will focus on the large metropolitan areas and the rural areas are just going to be on our own.
Right, and so what we do have is we have plans for power outages. We have plans for mass casualties. We have plans for disruption of water. But not all tied together under one event. What you're describing is some kind of, the way it would be done is a nuclear detonation in the atmosphere.
Not necessarily. It could be just a mass failure in the power matrix.
Sure, but that would shut
and
all the power down is what I'm saying.
The large areas on the eastern seaboard are not saying if this is going to happen. They're saying when it happens because of the age of their infrastructure and the continued buildup of usage on their infrastructure. And when it happens on the East Coast, there's going to be a trickle-down effect and a domino effect, and it will spread nationwide.
Sure. So I will make sure that your concern is taken to the Emergency Management Commission, which is made up of mayors of all of our cities, the county sheriff, and one member of the Board of Supervisors, along with our two full-time staff members down there, and that we dig into it. And as soon as we dig into it, we'll let you know.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for being here today. And we're already adjourned.
Okay.